You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
From a train that became disabled due to weather-related power outages, many flights at Logan International Airport have been canceled. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker is headed to London for a trade mission. Last week, another potential Republican presidential candidate, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, made the trip. Experts say he is trying to bolster his foreign policy credentials. A spokesperson for Walker says his trip is primarily focused on private meetings and factory tours to attract foreign investment to Wisconsin. And U.S. stocks opened lower following declines in overseas markets on weak Chinese trade data and more worries about Greece's finances. This is USA Radio News.
Today, my new dad and I shot off a rocket in the park.
Today, my new son and I failed to shoot off a rocket.
The rocket launched into the air.
And then crashed into the pond.
I'll never forget that day.
I'll never forget that day, even if I tried.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of kids in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
In recent months, American travelers have gotten used to lower gas prices. USA's Russ Jones has more.
The average price of a gallon of gasoline in the United States rose 13 cents in the past 2 weeks, following a nine-month price slide due to a rise in the price of crude oil, according to the Lindbergh survey released Sunday. Gas industry analyst Trilby Lundberg says higher fuel prices aren't due to problems in the gasoline market.
It is very, very well supplied. Refining capacity use rate is good. We don't yet have any added cost from summer blend. In fact, gasoline prices would not have risen at all if not for crude oil prices, which rebounded.
Lundberg says pump prices could climb as much as a dime in the near future. I'm Russ Jones.
New figures show at least 52 people have died and 79 have been injured in crashes involving General Motors cars with defective ignition switches. An attorney hired by GM says he has received more than 4,200 claims for payments. GM allegedly knew about the faulty switches in Cobalts and other small cars for more than a decade, but didn't recall them until February. The switches can slip out of the on position and cause the cars to stall unexpectedly. Democrats are already comparing Florida Governor Jeb Bush to former presidential nominee Mitt Romney, even though the presidential campaign is a year away. They are bringing up the fact that both men opposed the government's rescue of U.S. automakers and that both worked in finance and backed a Wall Street bailout. I'm Kelly Sloan, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they'll live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their own terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within your reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC.
The weather today is snow and freezing rain and sleet. High near 29, northeast winds around 11 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation is 80%. Total daytime ice accumulation of around 0.1 of an inch. Total daytime snow and sleet accumulation of less than a half inch possible. Tonight, snow mainly before midnight, cloudy with a low around 23, north winds 9 to 11 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation is 70%, and new snow accumulations of less than an inch possible. Tuesday is cloudy, then gradually becoming mostly sunny with a high near 36, north winds 9 to 13 miles per hour. Tuesday night is mostly clear with a low around 20, north winds 7 to 10 miles an hour. Wednesday will be mostly sunny, thanks, with a high near 33 and northeast winds 5 to 7 miles an hour. Wednesday night is a slight chance of snow showers after 1 a.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 25, and the chance of precipitation is 20%. Welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and this is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber Radio. NAMI is a National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we are all volunteers. We have no office. We work out of our houses. And we try to help people who either have someone in their family who has a mental illness or a relative or a friend. And it's just trying to help people understand more, break the stigma that's attached to mental illness. And we are going to run a class. My wife and I are going to teach it starting the 26th of February, and it's called Family to Family. You do have to register, but you can register by calling 908-735-4465. It is for 12 weeks, every Thursday night from 7 to 9:30. Everything is free. All the binders, everything is totally free. And it just helps people and families understand more what their loved one is going through and what medications, how it affects them, so on and so forth. We are very privileged today to have with us Dr. Marla Deibler. Dr. Deibler, are you there?
I am.
Oh, great. Okay. Thought I lost you there for a second because there was something blinking on the phone. Dr. Deibler is a licensed clinical psychologist, and she's the founder and executive director of the Center for Emotional Health of Greater Philadelphia, and with offices in Cherry Hill and also in Princeton. Dr. Deibler has been on Dr. Oz, A&E Headquarters, CBS, ABC, Fox News, and she has had articles in New York Times and other major papers, and I am proud to say she's also been on Mental Health Matters a couple times, and we are very pleased and privileged to have you with us, Doctor.
Thanks for having me.
Doctor, you specialize in anxiety disorders and obsessive-compulsive disorders, and along with that, there's a number of related disorders that tie in with that. Would you take us through these disorders and the symptoms?
Sure. It's actually a little bit simpler, as much as many mental health providers feel that the new diagnostic manual, the DSM-5, made their lives a little more complicated. I'm actually happy to say that in my specialty, it's actually a little bit simpler. It's some previously unidentified disorders now officially have names. So in addition to anxiety disorders, which include things like panic disorder, like agoraphobia, like generalized anxiety disorders, like specific phobias, like post-traumatic stress disorder, we also now have another family of disorders called obsessive-compulsive and related disorders. And OCD, obsessive-compulsive disorder, used to fall under the category of anxiety disorder, but now it has its own family. So now, under obsessive-compulsive and related disorders, we have obsessive-compulsive disorder, we have body dysmorphic disorder, we have hoarding disorder, we have trichotillomania, and we have excoriation or skin-picking disorder. So there's a whole new category of anxiety-based disorders now for us to work with.
It's ironic because I know a couple people whose, in fact, they're both cases, they're both daughters, have body dysmorphic, and it doesn't seem like that it's very easy to get through.
They're interesting cases. Oftentimes, those with body dysmorphic disorder have some obsessive-compulsive disorder traits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice now that they're sort of lumped together in our new diagnostic manual.
I had occasion to see the new diagnostic manual, and it's like, you know, 4 inches bigger than the old one, you know. So, or is it just my imagination? I don't know which, but it just seems like it's much thicker than the other one, maybe because of the different breakdown of the disorders that have now, you know, they've separated from one category, you know.
A number of new disorders.
Yes, right. Obsessive compulsive. Now, when someone is considered obsessive compulsive, does that mean they wash their hands, like for an example, not necessarily everybody does, but like wash their hands 10 times before they can leave or whatever the case may be?
It could be. Yeah. I mean, that is sort of the, you know, the stereotypical picture of someone with OCD. But in order to have OCD, someone has to have an obsession, which is an intrusive, unwanted thought that is difficult to get out of their head. And that thought may or may not have an associated feared consequence, such as a concern with contamination, for example. I'm going to get germs on my hands and get sick and spread sickness to others. And then related to that, those thoughts cause those obsessional themes cause a great deal of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And the anxiety is so unpleasant that they engage in behaviors to reduce the anxiety. And those are compulsions. So they might be things like hand washing, for example.
Right.
It could be other things as well,
right?
Depending
right.
on what their anxious theme is. But they are repetitive behaviors, whether physical behaviors or sometimes mental behaviors, that are done to reduce the anxiety associated with the obsession.
If someone, I know someone who's a child, she's mid-20s, goes through a ritual every night before she goes to bed. And mm-hmm. it has to be in that precise order, or she has to start all over and do it over again. I would assume that we're talking about obsessive compulsive.
Yeah, it could very well be. I mean, I don't know without, of course, interviewing that child.
Right, no, I understand.
To some extent, kids can be very regimented, and that's developmentally normal and appropriate for kids. Kids can have what seem like very rigid routines and behaviors that are transient. So whereas a nighttime routine could potentially be indicative of OCD, could very well be, it might also be just sort of normal developmental rigidity of childhood.
Yeah, but this young lady happens to, like I said, she's mid-20s. I think she's 26.
I see.
She has, you know, a few other, she has body dysmorphic and, you know, a few other disorders also. So I was just curious if that would come under obsessive compulsive by doing the same thing every night, you know, like
yes.
making sure the shades are closed and, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that would fall under that then.
Yes, it could. If it causes a great deal of distress and they need to engage in the behaviors repeatedly because it isn't done properly or because it needs to be done a particular way, then yes, absolutely. It very well.
Okay.
Could.
You had mentioned, I always have trouble saying this, agoraphobia?
Agoraphobia,
yes. That. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure. So agoraphobia is essentially an excessive anxiety to open spaces. And how it typically presents itself, it may or may not happen along with panic disorder. So the person may or may not have panic attacks also. But typically the way it looks is that people are uncomfortable in certain situations, such as waiting in a line in a grocery store or perhaps out in public in a large venue or surrounded by a lot of people. And typically they will engage in behaviors to reduce that anxiety or just avoid those situations altogether.
I enjoy reading about history, especially American history. And I understand that Thomas Jefferson had that he absolutely refused to go into a room with a large amount of people. He could talk from a balcony to, you know, 1,000 people, but hated to go into a room with 8 or 10 people. And I'm assuming that's a similar type thing from what you're saying.
Yeah, it could very well be.
Yeah. They said that it was, you know, a proven fact that he would, when he was writing the Declaration of Independence, he would take whatever he had written up to that point and get a hold of Ben Franklin and give it to Franklin so Franklin could take it into the room to the where the other people were, rather than Jefferson taking it in. And, it just struck me as, wow, you know, really? You know? And people have done research on him and found that this is true, you know? So it's just, you know, kind of interesting. You know, and
that is very interesting. As a clinician, I would look at that and say, well, Ben Franklin doing that didn't do him any favors. He was just accommodating his anxiety, which probably served to maintain it.
It's very possible from, a clinician's point of view. I mean, obviously, Franklin right. thought he was probably helping him, you know, but they wanted to get the Declaration of Independence written, you know. So, but, you know, I just thought it was kind of interesting, you know, and that it's been much research has been done on it. And it's been proven that he had this agoraphobia. Is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. I got it right.
Yeah.
Once out of 100. You know?
You did.
Yeah.
Agoraphobia, right.
So, you know, it's just kind of interesting, you know. Along with these disorders, you mentioned body-focused repetitive behaviors.
Right.
Could you explain that, hair pulling or nail biting, whatever, you know? When you say nail biting, I mean, a lot of people bite their nails.
They do.
Is that part of what you call repetitive behavior? Body-focused repetitive behavior?
The diagnostic categories include trichotillomania, which is hair pulling,
mm-hmm.
and excoriation, which is skin picking. How we describe them in the field is that they are part of a family of behaviors called body-focused repetitive behaviors. And what they are is essentially any kind of repetitive behavior that involves scratching or pulling or gouging or picking at the hair, skin, or nails that results in any kind of damage or lesion. So it might involve, you know, pulling hair, leaving bald spots, for example, or it might be picking skin and creating lesions or scabs. It might also be, yes, biting nails. That's just a socially acceptable form of that kind of behavior, absolutely, or cheek biting. Biting the insides of cheeks or
yeah.
lip biting,
okay.
those are common
right.
as well. Yeah, they're very common. If you lump them all together, it's about 10% of the population.
And, you know, it's funny because, you know, you see not a lot of people, I would say, but there's, you know, a large number of people. If you look at their hands, their nails haven't been clipped. They've been bitten, you know. And, you know, you just wonder from what you're saying if that's a indication of something more pronounced, you know, or is it just something
yeah,
that...
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting debate. I mean, when the DSM came out, people who were not familiar with this particular area of psychology or psychiatry...
Mm-hmm.
questioned whether or not something like skin picking should even be a diagnosis, saying that we are, you know, the critics said that we are pathologizing normal behavior because everybody picks their skin to some extent. And while that is true, people who actually have excoriation disorder, skin picking disorder, have you know, a behavior that goes well beyond that of normal skin picking, to the point where they have scars and lesions.
Right.
It is taking up a lot of time and is having a negative impact on their functioning. They avoid situations, perhaps, or they go to great lengths to cover it up. And so nail biting, is sort of similar in that it is a behavior that people engage in repetitively. Most people who bite their nails don't want to do it, just like hair pullers or skin pickers. Mm-hmm. They don't like that they do it, but it's difficult to stop.
Right.
And so really, right. It's the same kind of repetitive problem. That how much it negatively affects them and their lives, that's a different question.
Right.
For some people, it's probably not that big of a deal, and they don't need to address it. But for others, perhaps it's quite frustrating. Perhaps they would like to have long nails, and it's very frustrating for them. Perhaps mm-hmm. they've done damage to the enamel in their teeth from biting their nails so much.
Yeah.
Perhaps
right.
they bite down so low that they get skin infections. I mean, those things are negative consequences that may add up to significant impairment in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Right. Would cutting fall into that category?
It doesn't, actually. That's sort of a misunderstanding of skin picking, or even hair pulling, for that matter. Some people feel like it is like a self-injurious behavior, we call them, or like cutting. And it's really not. Cutting behavior is typically done to feel, and it's done intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
They want
right.
to engage in the behavior because it provides them with some sense of strong feeling. They're typically individuals that have a great deal of difficulty with emotion regulation, and when they engage in the behavior, they're usually overwhelmed and they feel kind of numb, and they report that engaging in that cutting behavior makes them feel, and they want to do that. People that engage in a BFRB, like hair pulling or skin picking, they don't want to engage in the behavior. They've actually gone to great lengths to try to stop the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing it to inflict pain. In fact, they don't find it painful. They're wired in some ways differently than those of us who don't have those problems neurologically. They don't experience it as painful at all. Most of them experience it as feeling good, or it's a relief, or it's satisfying in some way. It's not, or they don't feel it at all.
Right.
So, the experience of pain is definitely different for them as well.
I know I was speaking with someone, I think I mentioned before one time when you were on that I would go to, I was employed one day a week at the hospital, at the Hunterdon Medical Center, and in their inpatient unit, I would go once a week and talk to the patients. And there was a young man mm-hmm. in there who's talking to me, and all of a sudden he pulls up his sleeves, and he had more cuts and more scars on his arm than I could even imagine having. And he said that his mental agony was so bad that in order to relieve the mental agony, he would cut himself so he'd have pain to relieve the mental stress. And I just,
boggled
my mind.
Behavior.
I'm sorry?
That is true cutting behavior. Yeah, it's very different.
It just boggled my mind because, I mean, his arms from his wrist above his, where he would wear a watch, up to his elbow was just a mass of scars. And, I couldn't imagine, doing that, but obviously people do. And that's, it's sad, but when they...
it's a very troubled emotional process.
Yes. And I don't know that's one that is easily overcome, maybe it is, I don't know, but it just doesn't seem like it to me,
Well, I mean, we have good treatment. It's outside of my area of expertise. Mm-hmm. I can't get into detail because of that. But,
right.
For disorders that involve cutting behavior, typically what is done is a very, very well-supported evidence-based treatment called dialectical behavior therapy, and it is sort of like a souped-up cognitive behavioral therapy that teaches them to regulate their emotional responses better.
And are these things that we've been discussing, are they stress relievers, or is there a signs of a deeper disorder?
That's a good question. For some people, the function of those body-focused repetitive behaviors differs for individual by individual. So for some people, it may be like a stress relief sort of behavior. For others, not. The best way that we can sort of conceptualize it is that these individuals like to maintain a certain homeostasis, as we all do. And when they're understimulated, they engage in the behavior to sort of stimulate them a bit and bring them up to their comfort zone. And when they're overstimulated, they engage in the behavior to bring them down back to their comfort zone.
Right.
And so sometimes you see people hair pull or skin pick or nail bite when they're overstimulated, like when they're anxious or frustrated or very stressed. But also, sometimes we see, and sometimes those same individuals will also engage in the behaviors when they're tired or bored or, under-stimulated, sort of the opposite of what you would imagine.
Right, right. I think we all suffer from anxiety at one point or another during our lives. When would anxiety become a disorder that needs treatment?
You're right. I mean, anxiety is a normal thing. We all experience anxiety. It's our body's normal response to that which we perceive as being a potential threat. And sometimes there's real threat, and sometimes there is perceived threat.
Mm-hmm.
And those are very different things. But our body treats them the same way. So, for example, a real threat might be, let's talk caveman days. Being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. The anxiety response, the fight-or-flight response, was a useful thing for us. In that scenario, it allowed our bodies to gear up, essentially, through, normal neurochemical release to prepare it to run as effectively as possible or to get out of there or to fight, whatever that saber-toothed tiger was like. So, it prepared us to defend ourselves and preserve ourselves. However, our body doesn't know the difference between something like that and just threat that is perceived. So, for example, if someone has to give a speech and they think, oh, my goodness, I'm going to feel embarrassed. People are going to think that I don't know what I'm talking about, or I'm going to forget what I'm supposed to say. And so their body treats that as the same kind of threat. Now, that's just a perceived threat. Is it really a dangerous situation? No. But the body responds the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, unfortunately, with all those chemicals being released and their body prepared to fight or flee, we experience all sorts of physical symptoms related to that. So our heart will race, maybe we'll get sweaty. Maybe we'll have stomach upset because our circulation is going toward our muscles rather than our digestive process. And so we're geared up, but nobody needs to be geared up when delivering a speech. So instead, what you have is you're feeling that, but you're standing still and having to talk to a group of people, which is quite difficult. And then, people start then focusing on that physical sensation. Boy, that doesn't feel good. When you don't need that energy doesn't feel good. It's when that anxiety, whatever that is, whatever situation it is, it's when that anxiety, that worry, that physiological distress, it's when that becomes impactful on your daily functioning, on your life, then it may be a problem that
needs treatment
of some kind.
Right. Does Tourette's disorder or tic disorder, they fall under these categories?
It doesn't actually fall under that category, but it is related genetically to OCD. So tic disorders actually fall under a different category. They're disorders of childhood and adolescence, because they typically begin during that time of life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a neurologically based condition that is treated with medication, but also can be treated with behavior therapy.
And I know some people who have a loved one who has Tourette's, and they also have a mental health issue along with the Tourette's. Is that pretty common?
Yeah, it is. As with any psychiatric diagnosis, when someone has one psychiatric diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
the likelihood that they have additional diagnoses goes up significantly.
Right.
So they're more at risk for other problems than, you know, the average person on the street that doesn't have any kind of significant psychological distress.
We have to take a quick break. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we're very privileged to have Dr. Marla Deibler with us, who is a licensed clinical psychologist and also the founder and executive director of the Center for Emotional Health of Greater Philadelphia, which is located in Cherry Hill and also in Princeton. And we will be back in just a few moments.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down.
In August 2007, the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis collapsed, killing 13 people and injuring 145, including little children trapped on a school bus. The bridge had been rated structurally deficient, but those warnings were ignored.
Build it up with iron and steel, iron and steel, iron.
In New Jersey, there are 479 bridges carrying over 8 million vehicles a day, rated worse.
Iron and steel will bend and bow, bend and bow, bend.
These aren't just bridges waiting to be fixed. They're tragedies waiting to happen. On June 30th, the state's transportation fund will be empty. We need to replenish it now, because next time, it could be your family on that bridge. Go to forwardnewjersey.com and find out how you can help. Paid for by Forward New Jersey.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we're very privileged today to have with us Dr. Marla Deibler, who is a licensed clinical psychologist, and we have been speaking about anxiety disorders, obsessive compulsive disorders, hair pulling, biting, nail biting, skin picking, etc. Doctor, you there?
I am.
Okay, good. I was glad I didn't lose you. Would you take us through exposure and response prevention? What is it and who do you use it on?
Sure. So exposure and response prevention is the evidence-based cognitive behavioral therapy for obsessive compulsive disorder. And essentially what it is in a very hierarchical, strategic way, we help individuals to expose them in a very structured way to that which triggers their obsessive compulsive response. And we then prevent the response, which is the compulsion. So we begin with the least anxiety-provoking trigger, and we work up to the most anxiety-provoking trigger, basically trying to break the connection between the obsession and the compulsion.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like using what they're going through and exposing them to different ways of dealing with it, almost, if I interpreted what you said.
Well, we basically allow them to experience the anxiety, and instead of engaging in that safety behavior, which brings down their anxiety, we allow it to sort of naturally come down, or what we call habituate.
Okay.
So, for example, for someone, you mentioned washing earlier, we use that as an example. Someone who, for example, won't touch doorknobs with their bare hands because if they do, they have to wash because they feel like it's contaminated and they might get sick. What we might do, for example, part of the hierarchy might be to have them touch the doorknob, then to rub their hands together and maybe even touch their face and rub it all over themselves, and then not wash or sanitize until their anxiety abates.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then we do that repeatedly. And over time, the anxiety diminishes and diminishes and diminishes until touching the doorknob no longer makes them feel anxious. And when we're, you know, when their anxiety comes down significantly and they feel like, okay, that's not that anxiety provoking anymore, then we can move on to a more difficult challenge, basically.
Okay. Habit reversal training. What is that? I don't think I've ever heard of that.
Habit reversal training is the evidence-based treatment for habit behaviors or these body-focused repetitive behaviors. And actually, habit reversal is also the treatment for tic disorders and Tourette's, although sometimes it's called cognitive behavioral intervention for tics or CBIT. Mm-hmm. But it is based on habit reversal training. And basically what that involves is it involves education about what that problem is, essentially. It involves a full assessment of the behavior and its function. It's something we call a behavior analysis. And then it involves a few different kinds of interventions based on what we learn from that behavior analysis. So we might do things such as competing response training, in other words, giving them a more adaptive way to deal with that trigger so that it doesn't result in that behavior. We might also do something called stimulus control, which is manipulating the environment to reduce the thing that triggers the behavior, or make it less likely to trigger the behavior. We might also do other kinds of cognitive behavioral therapy techniques in order to intervene between that urge to engage in the behavior and the behavior, so that we're teaching them to deal with those urges more adaptively until their response is different and their anxiety and urge to engage in the behavior decreases.
It's very interesting. Mindfulness training. I think I know what it is, but I'd rather you say it.
Sure. So mindfulness training is essentially teaching individuals to be fully present and aware in the moment, right now. So it's paying attention to all of the senses, being in the moment, and not thinking about or paying attention to things in the past or things in the future, you know, what's going to be happening after I do this, you know, what other things I have to do today. It's not worrying about what happened yesterday. It's being mindful of everything that my body is taking in sensorily right now.
And who do you mainly use that on? Or, you know, with?
A mindfulness training is helpful for a lot of different things. And it's actually, it's kind of one of the newer, all the rage, sort of cognitive behaviorally oriented, I guess you could say it falls under the umbrella of cognitive behavioral therapy.
Okay.
And we might do it for individuals who are anxious. To help them sort of focus on right now rather than worrying about what's going to happen. We might do it with disorders which involve urges, like tic disorders. We might also do it with these body-focused repetitive behaviors to help them settle into the experience of the urge. Experience the moment right now without judging it, without fighting it, without labeling it as something they shouldn't be experiencing, but just to experience it for what it is. So it can be used for a lot of different things.
Oh, that's interesting. It just amazes me how far all these procedures have come over the years. You know, and still there's such a stigma towards mental health issues that there's so many more people who could benefit from, you know, things like what you're talking about, but don't want to step forward and say, I have this or that or whatever. And it's a shame because, like I said, there is help out there, you know. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't want to do that because they don't, you know, they're afraid of what the society will say about them, you know.
Yeah, it is a shame. I do think it's slowly, very slowly changing over time. The more we talk about mental health problems, I think the more they get destigmatized because people are becoming more aware of them. And also the more we educate people about these different kinds of therapies, the less they seem like mysterious or scary.
Right.
For example, it wouldn't surprise me if someone who is otherwise opposed to therapy because it seems aversive to them because of the stigma, they might want mindfulness training because that, you know, just helps me be more, you know, calm in the moment. It's stress management.
Right.
And so it might seem to them like a more approachable thing to seek out.
I also find that the more quote-unquote famous people who come out and admit to having either depression or anxiety or whatever the case may be, that helps also. You know, David Letterman not too long ago came out and said he suffers from depression. You know, people like that, you know, and the more that do come out and admit it and say it, you know, I think it's a help for the average person, you know, that they can go on with their life. And yeah, they may not be on television or they may not be, you know, a big movie star, but they can go on and live a normal life, you know. And I think that's pretty much, you know, helps when someone that is famous comes out and says that, you know. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it helps to destigmatize things. I think it helps to normalize different difficulties and helps people to feel like they're not the only people, which helps them feel more comfortable seeking help.
Right.
And, you know, I think that the more the field develops and the more scientific evidence we have to support these therapies, people are also more comfortable with coming out and understanding what kind of treatment they're getting and why they're getting it and how
exactly
it is likely to be helpful to them.
Exactly. If someone, what's the, what's the word? What does the process say for someone who reaches out to your organization and has one of the many disorders that you cover? What is the process for that?
Typically what happens is people will be referred by their primary care physician. Like perhaps they go to their primary care physician and they report that they're having some difficulty, or maybe they're up late at night distressed about this difficulty and they're on the internet, and perhaps they Google a search term about the problem or, you know, how to get help, and then they wind up at our website. From our website, they can submit an email inquiry asking about services. There's also a lot of reading materials. They can read about different problems, and there's some downloadable materials for some of these disorders, so they can read some different things, and they can also give us a call at the office and say that they're interested in learning more about our services or in scheduling an appointment.
All right, after they go through all of that and say they're accepted for treatment in your organization, is there like a case manager who works with them?
No, we're pretty individualized here in terms of our services. So what would happen is they would speak to our intake coordinator, and she would help to answer their questions, and she would set them up with an appointment with one of our psychologists. And then they would come to see that individual on their appointment day.
Okay. Is there, is your centers, do they have inpatient or are they just outpatient or are they both?
We are only outpatient. We do some intensive outpatient. So if people need outpatient therapy, but once a week just doesn't seem like it's going to be intensive enough for them to make progress, and sometimes we will see people more than once a week. But we do outpatient therapy.
I know this is probably not a good question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. On an average, what's the length of time for treatment?
I know this is not a good answer.
Well, it wasn't a good question. Put it that way. Yeah.
The realistic answer is it depends. It depends what they're coming in with. Mm-hmm. It depends on the difficulties they're having. It depends on how long they've been having it, the context in which they're having it. So there might be complicating factors like their family, whether or not there are other kinds of symptoms. You know, usually problems don't occur in a vacuum. So what other kind of difficulties they're having, if they have more than one diagnosis that they need to be treated for. Also how they do in therapy. So whereas a therapy for a pretty simple OCD might be somewhere from 12 to 20 sessions. It depends, because they may, you know, we often give homework so that they work on things between sessions. And if they're really, really good with that, they might progress pretty quickly. But if they're not so great about doing their homework between sessions, well, then it could take longer.
Okay. And, you know, yeah, I would, you know, I knew it wasn't that great of a question, but I figured I'd, because I'm sure there's probably.
But it's a realistic question.
Well, yeah, but, you know, and I mean, it's something that people would ask, yeah. Right? You know, and, you know, is, you have two centers, one in Cherry Hill, one in Princeton. Do they both treat the same disorders, or do they, or is there distinguishing between which center they go to?
No, they do. They treat the same disorders. We are pretty specialized in the treatment of anxiety disorders and obsessive compulsive and related disorders.
Okay. And do you take insurance or Medicare or Medicaid?
We do take some insurance. We don't take Medicare or Medicaid.
Okay.
Some insurance plans we do. We're also, you know, if people have out-of-network benefits, if we don't take their insurance, they can, you know, we'll explain to them how they can submit their own claims for reimbursement by their insurance company if they have out-of-network benefits.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, why don't you give the website and the phone number for your organization? If there's a different phone number for
sure.
Both of them, then give both of them.
Sure. Our website is www.thecenterforemotionalhealth.com. All written out, just like that. It's that long. Thecenterforemotionalhealth.com. And our phone number, we have one intake call-in number. It's 856-220-9672.
All right, folks, if you're still writing it down, it's 856-220-9672. And I didn't memorize it when you said it, Doctor. I have it written down in front of me, so... just didn't want you to think I was that great on remembering this stuff. But and maybe you could give the website again, because it is a long, you know, bunch
it
of words
is,
together.
TheCenterForEmotionalHealth.com.
Okay. And if you're in, I guess we could call it Southern New Jersey. Cherry Hill is Southern,
yeah.
I guess, right? It's what, 385
yeah,
North Kings Highway?
South, Princeton's pretty central.
Yeah, right.
Actually, you know what? We moved.
Oh.
Right? Uh-huh. We moved. Uh-huh. We have this beautiful new expanded center in Cherry Hill. We are on a main road. It's 1910 Route 70 East.
Oh.
It's right off the 295 Highway. Mm-hmm. Which is how you get around in South and Central. Wonderful new facility we have. It's beautiful. We have more offices, more availability to see folks.
That's awesome. And in Princeton, you're on 20 Nassau Street?
We are.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right on the main strip, right downtown Princeton, right across from the university.
Okay. I happen to know where Nassau Street is, so I'm familiar with that. It's just... So, I find it interesting and also sad that people go through what we've been talking about, hair pulling, nail biting, skin picking, cutting, obsessive compulsive. It just seems to me that it is sad. That people have this, but I think it's awesome that there's people like you and your staff who are there to help them. And I think that is, really wonderful. Because
we really do.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of people, and it's more than the average person realizes. When you stop and think that all their surveys and everything, and they've done a lot of background research and everything, and they come up with 1 in 4 people are affected by mental health issues, and to see the various roads that some of these issues take, like cutting, it's sad. Or any of this, the skin picking, hair pulling, all that. It's just sad that people go through this to try to live their life. And, that's why it's so refreshing to me to have someone like yourself and your staff, help these people. Because, To go on with their life and lead a normal life. I think that's wonderful. I really do.
Thanks. We love what we do, and we particularly love it because, it's a way to help some very specific groups that may not otherwise be able to get help, and we find it really rewarding.
Yeah, it is. And, that's why, people ask me, well, why do I still do NAMI and why do I still, teach classes and stuff like that? And my response is, if I can help one person get through
Absolutely.
Their issue, then the whole thing is worth it, And it's just, and you see a lot more than I do. Consequently, the more, you're more likely to have success stories, so to speak, but like I said, if I can help one person get through it, then that's awesome, you know. The website is thecenterforemotionalhealth.com?
It is.
Okay. Phone number was 856-220-9672. Why don't you give the address for Cherry Hill again?
Sure. Cherry Hill office is located at 1910 Route 70 East, right in the heart of Cherry Hill.
Right in Cherry Hill. And Princeton is 20 Nassau Street, which is the main street in Princeton.
Right.
And phone number I gave you. Is there anything else you'd like to, in the last minute and a half that we have, mention? Is there anything that we that I missed that you'd like to talk about for a minute and a half or 2 minutes?
You know, I think that the main reason that I do any of this, and I thank you so much for inviting me to be on again, is that it's so important to raise awareness of mental health issues so that people know that they're not alone, that a significant number of people struggle with these things every day. I mean, OCD is 2% of the population, trichotillomania is 2-4% of the population, skin picking is up to 5% of the population.
Right.
We're talking about a lot of people, and there are treatments that are effective.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for people to know that help is out there.
That's right. And, you know, I think it's awesome that you are out there. And, you know, I know the turmoil that my wife and I went through with our youngest son in the early years of his schizophrenia and being hospitalized almost consecutively for almost 3 years and in and out of the hospital more times after that than we care to remember. And now him getting people to help and finding that help. And it was just awesome. Doctor, I want you to come back again, if you're willing. I think that...
Thanks so much. I'd be happy to.
I think that it's awesome what you're doing. And just keep up the good work. And, you know, it's just beyond, you know, satisfaction to see that you're doing and helping all these people. And I really will have you back again. I promise. You've been listening to Mental Health Matters, folks. And we will be off next week due to President's Day. We will be back in 2 weeks. So we look forward. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. Take care now.
USA Radio News. I'm Kelly Sloan. President Obama held a press conference earlier with Germany's Angela Merkel to discuss violence in Ukraine by pro-Russian rebels.
Russian aggression has only reinforced the unity of the United States and Germany and our allies and partners around the world.
He says sanctions must remain in place, but he is not ready to send arms to Ukraine yet. Merkel believes diplomacy is the only way to end the conflict, but despite her opposition to sending lethal weapons to Ukraine, Germany and the U.S. will remain close allies.
The alliance between the United States and Europe will continue to stand, will continue to be solid.
Marriage licenses are being issued to same-sex couples in Alabama. This started this morning after the U.S. Supreme Court said it wouldn't stop the marriages. Alabama's Chief Justice Roy Moore tried to block the weddings late last night. Alabama is the 37th state to allow same-sex marriage. This is USA Radio News.
Don't miss Sprint's Cut Your Bill in Half event. Just bring your Verizon or AT&T bill and turn in your old phone, and we'll cut your rate plan in half. So if you're paying $260 a month for your family's four lines with Verizon, we'll cut it to $130. Or if you're paying $80 for yourself, we'll cut it to $40. Plus, we'll give you unlimited talk and text in the U.S. and match your data all on the Sprint network. The Cut Your Bill in Half event at Sprint. Bring us your Verizon or AT&T bill and turn in your old phone, and we'll cut your rate plan in half. Visit us at Sprint.com/halfprice or go to a Sprint store today.
Limited time offer available when you choose a leasing option or Sprint Easy Pay. Subject to credit and valid consumer report. Discount applied to monthly voice, text, and data charges with a minimum $10 monthly rate charge. Excludes taxes, surcharges, add-ons, apps, premium content, international services, additional lines, and device charges. Other plans may receive prioritized bandwidth availability. To improve data experience for the majority of users, throughput may be limited, varied, or reduced on the network. Max of 10 lines per account. No cash back. Third-party